welcome to the Grand Cast, Season 2, Episode Number 5. Today is Sunday. That doesn't usually happen. Normally episodes are Friday or Saturday, sometimes Thursday, but this might be the first Sunday one. It's a rainy afternoon, and I'm here with my guest, Brandon Holstein.
Yes.
Thank you for being here today, Brandon.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a very nice day for
being talking, inside.
Yeah, being inside and talking
drinking
about
tea
things.
And yeah. Should be a good one.
Should it's I
I'm gonna will be a good one.
I'm gonna guarantee it.
Guarantee. 100% yep. Guarantee.
Yep.
Nice. Nobody's done that yet, so I appreciate that. Takes a lot of the load off my shoulders.
My task today is to make sure your shoulders don't get overly loaded.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So I like to start out each episode going over the mission statement and goals for the show. The mission statement is, the purpose of the Grand Cast is to explore the comedy scene in Grand Rapids, Michigan, as it exists in 2017 through a series of conversations. And the goals, of which there are two, the first being to post one new episode weekly. This week's episode will come out sometime tonight, which is Ryan Kelly.
Oh, should be a good one.
Should be a good one. It was.
Did he guarantee? He didn't guarantee it, though.
He guaranteed nothing, but over-delivered. So,
I mean, at that point, what can you say?
Thank you.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you, Ryan. The second goal is... Ryan K.
Yes.
Because there are multiple Ryans.
So many.
Yeah. Also, thank you, Ryan L., for your listening support.
All the Ryans. I don't want to exclude any Ryans, so
yeah.
If there's any other Ryans out there, we also thank you. Or I do, at least.
A through Z. Yeah. Ryans A through Z, thank you. I think that's inclusive. Well, what if they're Russian and they use the Cyrillic alphabet?
You're also discounting androids. Could be Ryan 0 through infinity.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot of Ryans.
Probably 50 years from now, people will have numbers for names. And any Ryan.
Yes.
I don't want to be exclusionary. Thank you, Ryans. The second goal is to make at least one person's day better through the creation of quality content.
Well, I think we've knocked that out with just the length of our Ryan conversation at this point.
Yeah. The collective Ryans are
quality content.
Having better days now. And they are quality content. I had both of them on as guests so far, and they were both good episodes.
Well, I am setting the bar for Brandons everywhere.
You are. You're the first Brandon. Are there any other Brandons in the local comedy scene?
I'm not going to say there's not, because that will probably exclude the one Brandon I'm forgetting right now. But off the top of my head, I can't recall any Brandons. So
me either.
To those Brandons out there in the local comedy scene who I'm not remembering, I humbly apologize and will make it up to you with chuckles and guffaws later.
I'm sorry for putting you on the spot there. Calling you out on the other Brandons. That was inconsiderate of me.
It'll probably come up in our monthly meeting of Grand Rapids Comedy Brandons United. There's an acronym for that, I'm sure.
GRCBA?
Yeah, the Gerkibbas. Well, I've just pluralized it. Crap. All right. Anyway, yes. I'll deal with it when I get back with the clan.
It's a clan? You don't hear a lot of things referred to as clans these days.
Yeah, it's,
but it has a negative connotation.
Both Scottish and Battletech references there.
Oh. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Video gaming clans. Those aren't seen negatively. Well, by, I guess, some segments of the population. There's a little
the anti-video gaming segment of the population.
Yeah, it exists.
Yeah.
The extreme Christian right. They're like, video gaming is...
That Venn diagram is You've got the extreme Christian right and people who don't like video games, and there's a large overlap. The intersection is huge.
Yeah. And I believe in Islam, they're not allowed to play video games in like the strict versions of it.
You know, when I was imagining this podcast over the last few days, in no version of my imaginings did I think we would get into extreme Christian right and Islam tenets in the first 5 to 10 minutes of the conversation. But hey, the gloves are off.
Yeah, there's no boundaries on this podcast.
Decongestant drugs bring up many things along with a little caffeine.
Yes, I have supplied Brandon with multiple stimulant substances.
Just to make sure we don't...
They're all legal.
We don't want the audience to listen to me sniffling the entire time post-small spring cold.
So. He came in with the sniffle. I provided decongestants and cardamom black tea.
The finest black tea. I've never had cardamom black tea. So we'll segue into that of our Islam Christian right conversation.
I've actually found this at the kebab... Le Kebab, I think is the name of the restaurant over on 28th Street there. They had cardamom black tea that I really enjoyed. So I picked it up at the halal store over on East Paris there, the Green Market.
East Paris, Green Market. It doesn't ring a bell right now, but as a infrequent tea shopper myself, I also picked some tea up yesterday? Oh. I picked up some bulk tea. So
loose leaf?
Yeah, yeah. I heard there was some of the good stuff was at Global Infusions, so I snuck over there and picked up a couple different varieties and am looking forward to being all cheeky at home with my teas.
Nice. This is a bagged tea, unfortunately. It's not fair trade or organic.
Man, it's a struggle to not just judge you right now, Chris.
I'm judging myself pretty
harshly, maybe.
But I already bought it. Like, it's a sunk cost. I don't want to waste it. So,
good on you. Good.
Going forward, I'll probably do more of the global infusion style, loose leaf, fair trade, organic teas. Yeah. It's just better.
I mean, the sky's the limit as far as where and what tea you can get. You don't have to go to Global. You can go to, Meyer. Oh, they don't have loose leaf.
I don't think so.
Are we getting paid, by the way, for all these plugs? I'm bringing up a lot.
Karmically.
Karmically getting paid? Okay, good.
Yes. Yeah.
So I want to make sure the advertising lines up afterward.
Yes.
Good.
There are influential sponsors who take note and... getting into the interview.
Oh, we haven't gotten to it yet?
No.
This is the schmoozing portion?
Yeah. This is just the opening setup for the questions.
You're just greasing my wheels here.
I think it's the tea. Normally I'm drinking beer because it's in the evening. And I drink too much beer. And people who come over for the podcast are comedians who often enjoy poisoning their bodies with alcohol. So
it's common.
Yeah. This is a nice change of pace. I don't think I've ever had a caffeine-fueled podcast before.
Future interviewers, another bar has been set. Can you be caffeine-fueled? This is not just for all the Brandons out there. This is for any other.
An open challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, I'm distracting you repeatedly here.
No, it's good. What is your favorite color?
Oh, gosh. I'm going to go with blue right now. Probably a darker blue.
Darker blue? A navy?
Yeah, I go navy. I think that's where I'm feeling these days is the navy blue.
Like your hat?
Yeah, in fact, my hat and shirt have my favorite color of blue. Mostly because they're the color blue of a sport team that I follow.
That appears to be some sort of a bird standing on a ball.
It's a chicken on a ball, yeah.
Is that a basketball?
It's a very antique soccer ball. It's like what one of the first soccer balls looked like. So it's like a heritage emblem, so to speak. They're called the Spurs, or Spurs, for anybody who's really into it. You drop the a lot of times. It's not required, but yeah. Anyway, Tottenham Hotspurs. And they,
that's the team?
That's the team.
Is that AIA?
That is the sponsor of the team. That's, they make big money putting that, those three letters on the front of their jerseys.
What is AIA?
AIA is an insurance company in South Asia, Southeast Asia. I think it used to be AIG.
Oh,
and after
they
changed the whole kerfuffle in 2008-ish, they rebranded as AIA. So again, we're going to keep plugging all of these things.
Yeah. What? So where's the soccer team from?
They are from North London. Yep.
Or the football team, I suppose.
Yeah, it depends on where you're... I mean, I'm assuming we have a primarily American audience here, so we'll go with the soccer team.
There's a surprisingly large amount of Germans that listen, and then Estonians.
Football for all of the Germans or Estonians out there.
Yeah. Yep. A couple in Latvia, a few in Romania. A lot. Large Eastern European audience.
You've got the Eastern Bloc covered as far as audiences are concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trying to spread the voice of America.
I think somebody's got that one already.
Yeah.
Or do you mean lowercase voice of America?
Oh, yeah. All lowercase.
Okay. So, yeah. Navy blue is, I think, currently my favorite color.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
What is your earliest memory of experiencing comedy?
Earliest memory of experiencing comedy. What do they say when you repeat a question? It's because you don't know the answer right away, so you're just biding time.
It's effective. It reinforces the question for the audience in case they missed it first time around.
Look at that. Okay, I'm just keeping everybody, just holding them in my heart. Earliest memory of comedy. I'm going to go with Eddie Murphy Delirious on VHS. My brother brought it home, and we watched it. I'm almost positive we watched it before my parents got home from work.
Hopefully.
Yeah. I was really, really young, and we watched that, and it blew my mind for a couple of reasons. One, I'd never heard that many swear words in a 1 hour set before.
Probably some new ones.
He's used swear words that still boggle my mind to this day. But, just seeing somebody, I mean, looking back now, it's one of those videos. It's one of the greatest stand-ups ever is Eddie Murphy Delirious. I personally think it's better than his Raw set. I think his Raw set kind of, I think he's feeling his oats a little too much in Raw, whereas in Delirious, he's kind of on the upswing as far as oat feeling is concerned.
What's a good texture of oats for you?
Just a slight chew.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't want mushy. I don't want goop oats.
Yeah. What do you generally add to your oats?
I will put cinnamon, honey, and maybe a touch of milk if I'm feeling really extra kind of out there with everything to just jazz up those oats. So
I like molasses.
Whoa, you're going, that's a deep cut. Molasses is a strong flavor.
It is. I also like nutmeg.
Nutmeg? Isn't that a poison?
In sufficient quantities, yes.
And you're not using those quantities, obviously.
I toe the line. I haven't made any fatal mistakes yet.
But my hand's only slightly shaking. I'm right in the sweet spot with nutmeg today.
Some frozen berries sometimes. You can get like a big bag of frozen berries.
And you put them in your oats?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, here's to get totally off of the old comedy reference here. Are you a steel cut or a rolled oat guy?
Steel cut.
Yeah, I used to be steel cut. I switched to rolled.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Why?
Steel cut were, without getting into specifics or details, harder on the digestive track than rolled.
What Josh would call bad times.
Yeah, occasional bad times with steel cut. So I go with rolled now. I get, you know, most of the flavor and sensation. Wait, no, never mind. We'll cut that out in post, right? But yeah, I get my oat kick, and I just miss out on all the great nutrients that steel cuts have.
Oh, there's more nutrients?
I mean, I'm assuming all these people can't be promoting steel cut just because they're better. They've got to be more healthful, right?
Maybe it's just cheaper to produce and
Like they got oats and they're like, oh, just do the steel cut. Yeah, that's right. Oh, crap. We got to roll these too.
It's all about the margins.
The old oat market.
Yeah, Big Oat is very influential in.
Big Oat. Yes. Yes. Yeah, they all wear funny hats, right? And have white hair.
Yep. I don't want to go into the religious side of things, but they're all kind of uniformly Quaker, I believe.
I think, well, isn't Bob trying to hedge in on the old Quaker Big Oat homogeny or whatever it's called? Hegemony? What word am I looking for here?
Yeah, I think that one. Yeah, Bob and his big red barn, right?
Yeah, and then there's the Irish folk.
Oh, I'm not familiar with them. Are they affiliated with the IRA?
You know, the Irish Oats people, I'm not sure where their affiliation is as far as, you know,
Catholic or Protestant.
Nascent terrorist constructs in the Irish Republic.
Huh. That's the behind the scenes stuff that you don't think about when you're buying a bag of oats.
But I want to go to the board meeting for the Irish Oats people now and just see how Protestant versus Catholic it really is.
It'd be interesting. Probably make a good documentary.
I'm just imagining the story of Protestants versus Catholics told through oat consumption from A to Z. So it'd be an angle I think many people haven't pursued or even thought of.
Yeah. And a lot of people eat oats.
So. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, wow. There's another Venn diagram that's just kind of a weird overlap.
Yeah. Hmm. Be nice to induce some convergence on the diagram, I feel like.
In Big Oat.
They don't want you to know. There's a lot of suppression.
Deep, dark secrets in Big Oat. Yep.
It's kind of dangerous for us to even be talking about this, so let's move on to the next question here. Yeah. How did you first get involved in performing comedy?
First involved in performing comedy, I would say, are we talking like in an official capacity or in a I just did something comedic and I'm performing capacity?
Both.
In a I just did something comedic and performing capacity, because I think that would be first chronologically. I, in a former life, was a ballroom dance instructor.
Oh.
Yep, yep. And did that for several years. But in the process of doing that, we would host weekly parties for all the students because, you know, you want to be able to use all these great skills that you're learning. And if you keep telling them to go out to the bar, they're probably not going to be real happy with you. So we would hold parties for the students. And in doing so, you got to play a lot of music for them, but you also have to MC the parties. And I eventually became a bit of the MC for the party, and you get a microphone, and when you get a microphone, you start saying stuff, and over time, I realized that I would occasionally say funny things, and people would occasionally laugh, and I even had some different students who would say, like, you need to do this, you know, you need to go out and do comedy, and all these things, and I would just, you know, smile and nod and thank them, but I do remember those moments going, like, hey, this is kind of cool to be in front of people and just being a schmuck and people actually appreciating it. So if you're asking me in an official capacity, the first time I performed for anyone, comedically speaking, would be after my first class, my first series of classes at the Civic Theater wrapped up. At the time, they have like a, they call it an informance, but it's like a recital at the end of the classes. And it's optional, but obviously I chose to do it. And yeah, I performed improv in front of 20 or 30 people, some of them who actually knew me. And it was a thrill.
How long ago was that?
I want to say that was 2 years ago. Yes, I'm almost positive now it was 2 years ago. Yes, I'm 100% sure now.
So did you only teach ballroom dancing, or were there other styles of dance?
With the ballroom, no, I taught anything that was with a partner. So if you had to hold a partner in your hand, arms, hold a partner in your arms, or hold hands with another person, if somebody else is involved, I taught those styles. So ballroom, Latin, swing, salsa, pretty much.
The tango?
I taught the tango, taught polka, not great, but I taught it. So,
what about like square dancing or line dancing?
I did teach that once.
Once?
By request to a large group of people that I will not name. And I am going to apologize to this unnamed group because it was very early on in my career. And I was basically one step ahead of them as far as knowledge is concerned. Hmm. And they did not get good instruction.
Hmm.
I think they knew it too by the end. It was like, I want to say 30, maybe 40 people. I was trying to teach as a group how to do like square dancing. And I barely knew how to square dance. So sorry, unnamed people. I got better. Maybe not at square dancing, but I got better.
How did you first get involved in teaching dance?
Wow, we're going deep into the archives here. I've had several different careers over my life or jobs or things, and I was in a job as an engineering technician for a local manufacturing company, and I was living in Holland at the time, or actually I had moved to Grand Rapids, but was still working in Holland at the time, and it was extremely unfulfilling. Like, I basically worked in a factory, and I had a friend who had moved back to West Michigan and was reconnecting with him, and he had gotten a job as a ballroom dance instructor. And he worked on me for a year, almost a year straight. Oh, you got to come in, you got to come in, you got to come in. This is so much. I'm like, they're teaching you how to dance for free. They pay you to learn how to dance, and you dance with these cute girls all the time. And I was like 23, 24, maybe 25, somewhere in that range. And I just got to a point with the job I had where I was like, why not? Why not give it a shot? So I went in and started trying it out. And eventually I sat down with the owners of the studio and I said, what are we doing here? Like, are we going to do something? And they said, well, yeah, actually we were thinking of offering you a job. Is it something you'd be interested in? And I was like, yeah, let's do this. And 7 years later, yeah. So that it, you know, right place, right time. I was looking for something and it happened to be that thing. So
you still do that now?
I do not teach anymore. Not really adamantly. I just don't seek it out. Dancing, only if it comes up. I do occasionally dance. I have some friends who do enjoy dancing. Will Altman being one of them. Will's actually a really good dancer too. For those people who don't know all of the many varied size of Will Altman. But yeah, he and his wife Tasha will occasionally reach out and be like, hey, we're going dancing if you're up for it. And sometimes I am. Or if it comes up at a wedding, you know. It's always interesting when people find out you know how to actually dance. So
what is your favorite style of dance to participate in?
I would say salsa is my favorite style. It's a ton of fun. It's Latin, so it's actually really cool looking. I enjoy tango, but it's a really hard dance and very few people know how to actually do it. And one of my most anxiety-ridden memories was when I was in another country down in South America at the time, and the band at the restaurant we were at just having dinner found out that the person I was with and myself knew how to dance. And I think actually we had gotten up and danced a little bit, but they specifically found out that we knew how to dance. And so they asked us through somebody else if they could play a song that we danced to. And the person I was with and I had only danced like salsas and maybe some rumbas or some cha-chas. And they started playing a tango. And I freaked out in my head, but just smiled. And I guess we looked great, but that was... Yeah, anyway, I'm digressing, but... Mm-hmm.
Can I ask what country, or did you specifically not want to disclose that?
I was in Colombia at the time.
Ah.
So, yep.
Nice. How'd you like it?
Colombia?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, great. It was fantastic. I mean, I was with Colombians who knew, like, I was in a safe circle the entire time, so... If anybody's out there thinking like, oh, I'm going to go to Colombia because Brandon said it was great. Like, I just happened to be with a lot of Colombians at the time too. So I knew I didn't know where not to go, but they knew where not to go.
Yeah.
So all the pieces of Colombia that I saw were fantastic. So highly recommend. Would go back.
Did you go to like Medellin or Bogota?
I went to Cartagena and I spent a week in Cartagena and I also went to Bogota for a week. And Cartagena was nice. It's warm and on a beach, but Bogota was awesome. Just it's fantastic.
Is that the capital?
City. It's the capital, yep. It's up in a valley, up in the mountains, and huge city. And yeah, highly recommend it. Really cool.
Speaking of travel, next question. Would you travel to Mars, the planet?
Are we talking one way or round trip?
The second question of that is, what if it was a one-way trip? So,
With infinite means and infinite funds, would I go to Mars? Are we saying like...
If the opportunity arose for you to travel to Mars
yes
one
or
way
no. Yep.
As a colonist, would you?
So my initial response is like, yeah. And then I took a breath and I asked, would you actually go? And I started to think of like, what's important to me when I'm being my best self? And going away from all of the things I hold near and dear actually runs contrary to me being my best self. So I'm going to say enthusiastically, yes, but no, I wouldn't go.
What if it was a round trip? If you're
round
just
trip,
going for
I would
like
I
two
would,
years.
Yep, I would go. I would do that. Relationships and family. Well, I would say relationships. I kind of formed my own family of people over the years, are super super important to me. They're almost critical to me. So the idea of going on a one way trip somewhere and going away from all that, couldn't do it. I guess you can form new relationships, right? I'm not going alone. I'm a colonist with other people.
With thousands of other people.
Yeah, well, I mean, with that, I guess I would think about it then. Because, you know, you form new relationships with new people. So, I consider it at that point.
The other day, when we were having beverages at your condo, I noticed you have Ender's Game.
I do.
Do you enjoy science fiction?
I do. It's my second favorite genre.
Oh, what's your first favorite?
Fantasy, high fantasy.
The elves and dwarves and
elves,
dragons.
Elves, dwarves, and... giants, swords, spells, the fantastic, all those things. But yes, I do enjoy a good sci-fi novel. Ender's Game. Actually, my favorite novel is Dune, which is sci-fi, but it has a ton of mysticism in it. And Ender's Game was one of my favorite books for a long time until I found out more about Orson Scott Card, which made me question how much I should support Ender's Game. And,
what about him? I don't know.
I guess I should tread lightly here because I've only slightly researched it, but his stances on a lot of hot topics are fairly strong. And from the little bit I gleaned, they didn't necessarily align with the stances that I had personally regarding...
Politically?
Yeah, politically. And
is he a C word? Conservative?
I picked up... I don't know if I can accurately label him. I don't know enough about him. I know he speaks strongly about the things that he feels. And this has all happened post-writing Ender's Game. So I don't want to, I guess I'm not intending to get an Orson Scott Card rant or rabbit hole or anything, but
it sounds like his oats are pretty soggy.
He has a different blend of oats. He uses different spices. There's no molasses or cinnamon going on there.
Did you see the movie?
I did see the movie.
What'd you think of that?
I thought as a book reader, somebody who loved the book, it was a nice homage to people who read the book. I felt sorry for anybody who hadn't read the book.
Yeah.
Because I could see you getting pretty lost. But yeah, I actually, there is a book, I wish I paid more attention to this later, that he wrote where Ender is an older person, like an adult, on a different planet. Spoiler alert for anybody who's not read Ender's Game, he becomes an adult. And that book, was it Speaker for the Dead? I'm trying to remember.
Not sure.
It's either Ender's Shadow or Speaker for the Dead. And that book I thought was fantastic, but I also read that when I was an adult. So I think Ender's Game is great for young adults, and then it doesn't age well as you become an adult. But the other one that I'm referring to, either Ender's Shadow or Speak for the Dead, where he is an adult, is much more relatable as an adult. So
might have to revisit that.
Yeah, it was good. But yeah, my favorite book is Dune, which I think is a fantastic piece of canon. And
all the politics and the whole universe that's created.
Oh, it's a fantastic universe. Frank Herbert, I think is how you pronounce his name. He built fantastic universe. He built fantastic protagonist. His magic system that he uses is really accessible, I think. But the best part for me is how much Eastern philosophy and Western philosophy kind of weaves into it. A lot of Eastern stuff. So, and a lot of Islam. He has a lot of Islam influence, especially tribes and all the different names and stuff. So it's truly a fantastic piece of work.
Have you gotten into Asimov at all?
I don't know if I've ever read Asimov.
It's so really well done. It's large in scope. Like, the stories will cover hundreds or thousands of years, but it's like very detailed chunks occurring along the timeline. And a lot of it's within the same universe and kind of around the same theme of events.
I feel like I either have read something a long time ago. It's just, the thing with sci-fi is it's not my first choice. I'll often go to fantasy and read as many high fantasy novels as I can, and I end up usually falling back on sci-fi. And then in recent years, screens have almost obliterated my attention span.
Yes.
So reading books now, unless it like grabs me, or maybe that's a sign of becoming a older adult, or I don't know what, how many different things are at play there. But unless a book grabs me, a lot of times I'll just put it down and move on to other things.
Yeah. I've really enjoyed reading on a Kindle because it's kind of a screen.
Yep.
And it can hold as many books as you want, and it's backlit. And I really enjoy that you can just like hold down on a word and then it pops up the definition, which is very nice.
Oh, you don't have to go look up the word anymore?
Yeah, because like when I'm reading a paper book, I have to like set it down, get my phone out, look up the word.
Oh, jeez. First world problems.
I know. It's terrible.
And now you don't even have to do that. You can just beep and there it is.
Yep. Don't have to like go down to the library and check out a dictionary. And
I was just having a conversation about libraries just this past week with somebody. Like, what
are you, pro or anti?
Oh, I love libraries. Growing up, I see them now as kind of a dinosaur construct. I mean, I have a pretty narrow scope on the whole thing, but we don't need to store books anymore.
They do digital lending.
Well, yeah, but then you just need like an IT guy.
Yeah.
You need like one person in a call center who's the librarian, and then you need the IT guy to keep everything organized. But otherwise, like the buildings themselves, I don't know. I know they've had to repurpose and everything, but it kind of made me sad. Like all my fond memories of library-ness.
Well, they still function as like a community center. They have like classes and organized events.
Is that more their niche now, though? They're now becoming like community centers?
I think so.
So they are rebranding.
They do. They have like performances of local musicians and like different cultural events.
You know, that
showcases.
That makes me feel a little better about the whole thing. Here I thought it was like something just dying off, and now they're kind of repurposing themselves as a... Okay, I feel all right. But now, well, maybe, I don't know if this is everyone, but when you were young, were you like, oh, I'd like to be a librarian someday. I'd like to be around all these books and everything.
Not me.
No, that's just me? Oh, okay. I also found out how much librarians made, and I was like, whoa, that's... Yeah, I like things.
You could be like a research librarian like for a law firm. I think they make pretty good money.
Well, at this point, I think the librarianship has sailed for me. I think that was a real short period between the ages of like 9 and 9.5, where I thought being a librarian might be cool. Maybe just for a summer. Maybe just the summer of 1986, I thought being a librarian was pretty darn cool. But maybe not.
It was probably a good summer. If you had to have one body part replaced with a robotic version of that body part, which would you choose and why?
A robotic version of any body part. Is the robotic version a perfect version of that body part? Are we talking like
it's
perfect
superior.
Plus? Superior. It's superior. It's perfect plus.
I wouldn't
plus.
Say perfect because that's kind of...
But it's an enhanced version of that body part.
Yes.
You know what? I'm going to go with nose.
Hmm.
Yeah. Last few years, I have a diminished sense of smell, so I would really like to have my sense of smell at maximum capacity again.
Hmm.
Which I think it would look weird to have a big metal nose, but screw it. I like all my other body parts. They work pretty good. That's the one I wish would get beefed up a little bit.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, and there's been some confusion over these prompts. What it actually means is please talk about, but I like how let's talk about sounds better. So let's talk about civic improv and rapid delivery improv.
Sure. Me? Oh, just me?
Please talk about.
Elucidate. Or,
yes.
Yeah. Ah, I'm hitting.
Sorry, Josh. It was a table bump.
I bumped the table, Josh. Can you? He'll take that out in post.
Nope.
Nope, he won't.
Nope. I might make it louder, in fact.
Will we take out this conversation talking about post in post?
I could. But I'm not going to.
Okay. Talk about rapid delivery. Rapid delivery is fantastic.
It is.
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, I'm obviously very biased. It's where my world, for in all intents and purposes, really grew from a little seed in rapid delivery. Going through level one, going through a couple levels of level two, seeing what is out there, being taught some do's and don'ts, doing practices, like all the rhythms and different things, eventually being invited to join the troupe. It's fantastic. Would highly recommend it to anybody, whether they're comedy focused or not. Just like take level one just to go out and do that. I'm biased because at the time I was searching for something else in my life. It was a transition time for me. I was transitioning from a previous relationship and just looking for something else. And what I think ultimately I was looking for was like a better version. No, that's not what I'm looking for. I'm like a family, something, a tribe. And rapid delivery was my gateway into the Grand Rapids comedy scene, the improv scene. And they're just wonderful people. Bart has really put together some good stuff over there. So, and I still have friends to this day from Rapid Delivery, even though I don't spend nearly as much time with them, that I think will be in my life for a long, long time, or at least I hope are in my life for a long, long time.
So Rapid Delivery is the official improv troupe of the Grand Rapids Civic Theater?
Correct. Yep, they are. So in order to become part of RDI, Rapid Delivery Improv, you have to go through level one and level two, although I know if you have previous experience and talk to Bart on the side, exceptions are made regarding whether you have to do level one. But they do want you to at least go through part of the program so that everybody, I'm sure they have lots of reasons, but yeah.
They did a nice show last night at the Fuse Box.
Oh, they did. They did. That was actually my first time seeing them not being involved with them specifically.
Oh.
As just an audience member.
Did you sneak out early?
I did, yeah.
Okay.
Yep, I left with Paul Brandon and Walt Brand. Old Walty, his dad. We snuck out after Rapid Delivery was done.
Okay. I missed you then.
Yeah, I can't remember who was going when we left, but yeah. They had to get going, and they were a ride, and I didn't feel like walking in the rain.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about With the Dark.
Hold on, let me turn the lights off here. For listeners out there, the lights are now off.
It's quite dim in here.
Yes. Chris, are you going to be all right? I'll just turn them back on.
I'm going to turn the brightness on the laptop screen up a little bit.
Okay.
What? Bask in the
glow. Whoa. Wow, your face is taking on a whole different kind of aesthetic.
It's the blue light from the screen.
Yeah,
it changes your personality, too.
You look more ominous in this light.
I feel more ominous.
You should probably do this more often.
Yeah, it's a good look for me.
If you're looking to be ominous more often, you should probably do this.
Carry around a blue light source and
I'm actually looking forward to the next time I see you and you're carrying around a blue light source. Like, hey, whoa, dude, all so ominous over there. So yes, With the Dark. Yeah. They are, geez, I don't even know who found it. I was invited to be a part of it, I want to say about a year ago, give or take. And it's been transitory, mostly just a group of people from RDI and otherwise who wanted to do something on the side a little more long form based. RDI is pretty much short form, but With the Dark and it is a long form and it's all in the dark. We use sounds of our voices and various instruments, most of which Will has bought at estate sales and off of the internet to make different noises. So he's got his own Foley kit, as they call it.
A Foley kit?
Yeah, a Foley engineer is a sound engineer who makes sound effects in Hollywood. So if you have a lot of utensils to make sounds, I think they're referred to as a Foley kit.
Interesting.
I could be making this up. I do that often. So feel free to Google that.
I'll accept it as is and use that from now on.
Let the record show it's now become a Foley kit. So yeah, but yeah, we sit in the dark and we get weird in a funny way. We hope the audience enjoys it. They seem to be enjoying it.
I've enjoyed every show of yours that I've seen.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. We appreciate that. We have a lot of fun. So
it's a very innovative style. I think it's very effective.
Yeah, I think, and you'll probably want to check with some people who are more closely aligned with the heritage of With the Dark, but it's based on The Bat, which is a long-form version of improvisation, and we tried to put our own spin on it. We get out there, and 20, 25 minutes, we create a universe in the dark with sounds and noises and voices and do our thing.
Nice. Let's talk about Beer City Improv.
That is a recent endeavor spawned out of my training I've been continuing to do on the side on my own in Chicago. I've been training at the IO Theater for off and on for about a year now also. And the IO Theater's primary form of improv is long form based around The Herald, which is a whole rabbit hole on its own. But it's just basically it's a 20 to 40 minute long form improvisation art form thing. And I've been taking these classes at IO and I'm like, oh, I want to like practice this. I want to apply what I'm learning in kind of a real world environment, and heard through, I think I heard through, how did this line up? I'm trying to remember how this lined up. I think I heard that Beer City was doing something and they were a Herald group and reached out to them. I don't know how it all ended up happening. Josh and Tom were involved. It might have been when they also took lessons at IO that we started talking about it because we carpooled. However we get there, however the genesis is, I started just piggybacking on some practices and sticking my really obnoxious face into shows, and they haven't kicked me out yet, although with so many things on my agenda, that's right. I just said I'm really frickin' busy. No, just there was a lot of stuff going on where I don't know how much it will consume my time, but I mean, we just had a great show a couple of weeks ago opening for a local or for a bunch of people from Chicago that Josh put together. And yeah, it's fun.
It was a very good show.
Yeah. The people from Chicago did probably, it is up there with one of the best shows I've ever seen as far as improvisation. It was really, really well done.
Little Tootsies.
Little Tooties.
Tooties.
Yeah, Little Tooties. Yep. And
I said Tootsies in the ad copy.
And I think, yeah, well, I mean.
Yeah. Sorry, Little Tooties. I like Little Tootsies better.
I think that's a counterculture group that focuses mostly on feet comedy. Small feet comedy.
There's probably a demographic for that.
Yeah, small feet comedy out there. So that's Little Tootsies. But this is Little Tooties, which has got a whole different.
Fart comedy?
Yeah, but small fart comedy.
Small farts.
Yeah. So much more cute oriented.
Yeah.
You know, adorable flatulence on a small scale. That's actually probably their, they'd be like
tagline.
Little Tooties, adorable flatulence on a small scale. Come see us next week. Yeah, I think a couple of them were part of Little Tooties. Some of them were not, but who's arguing? It was just five hilarious people. Who happened to come in and do a great show.
You work quite a bit with the extremely talented Paul Brand. That must be amazing.
I mean, geez, where do you start?
If you could start by please telling me a story about Paul, I'd appreciate it.
Oh, man, a story about Paul.
Some memorable.
Yeah, I'm going to throw Paul under the bus here a little bit.
Uh-oh.
Paul has many fantastic talents. Almost too many to really list. In fact, I'm just going to say there's too many to list.
The numbers don't go high enough.
They don't. Infinity plus one. But Paul is less gifted in realms of rhythm. And so I just remember one of the first song-oriented improvisations we had, it was just like a singing improv with like a specific rhythm and a beat to it. Like, Paul was all over the place. Like, it was almost comical. I thought he was doing it on purpose because he was starting at random points and then, like, missing. I just kind of looked at him with my head slightly askew. Like, oh, are you trying? Oh, you're not trying to do that. So every now and then I'll tease Paul about his fantastic rhythmic qualities. So I think I teased him that it was a little bit like Navin from The Jerk, or Steve Martin's lead character from The Jerk trying to keep the beat with his adoptive family from the South.
Yes. Fantastic movie.
Yeah. It's these cans. He hates these cans.
I need to rewatch that. I haven't seen it in a while.
26th anniversary edition is very good.
Oh, did they add in some deleted scenes or?
I think I just remastered it and made it palatable so that it didn't look like something made from 1979.
26th anniversary edition?
Oh yeah, yeah. The 26th anniversary. It's a big anniversary in the Jerk history.
I don't recall that. Was that a reference in the movie to?
I think they just picked 26.
Oh.
Yeah. Because it wasn't 25.
They let it slip a year.
They're like, no, guys, let's go with 26.
Wasn't there something we were supposed to do last year?
Oh, crap. All right, just put a 6 on it. Nobody will mind. They'll think it's intentional.
What is your favorite comic book?
Comic book?
Yeah, because I saw you had the Calvin and Hobbes complete collection.
Comic book. Yeek. So the Calvin and Hobbes complete collection doesn't count?
It can. Or you also have Watchmen that I saw.
Yeah, both of those are fantastic. Another one I enjoyed was one. Actually, it can't be a favorite if I can't remember the title of it. One of the Batman graphic novels was really fantastic, too. But I can't recall off the top of my head, so it can't be one of the favorites. So we'll say
one
either.
Of the Frank Miller ones? Or the Killing Joke?
It wasn't Killing Joke. It was. I've read two different fantastic ones. One of them was when Batman was like 50 years old.
Mm.
which I think is The Dark Knight.
I think so. Let me see.
Though, well, there are a couple different series of Batman graphic novels that are fantastic. One of them is Frank Miller, and I think the other one is Alan Moore. Didn't they both write for the Batman graphic novels?
I believe so. I think it was The Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah, that rings a bell. Dark Knight Returns, and I think Batman Year One might have been the two.
Yep. So, Year One. Both Frank Miller.
I think you probably couldn't go wrong with either. But they're just because I can't remember them as well, I'm going to say they're not my favorites. So if we're talking
very, very good.
Yeah, just fantastic graphic novels. But if we're talking favorite, I would go with The Watchmen. If we're talking just in the comic realm, if we're allowing the broadening to be in place here, the Calvin and Hobbes box set it shaped me in my entire life. So
yeah.
Just allowing to, like, that your imagination can be okay. It can be okay to think all kinds of crazy things and have opinions and to walk in the woods with your best friend and ask why about a lot of stuff.
Hmm.
So, do you like me some Calvin?
Thank you.
My pleasure.
What are some of your favorite comedic movies?
The Jerk. Let's see. The Jerk, Monty Python's Holy Grail. I'm trying to think here. Dumb and Dumber is one of my favorite movies. I think those are three formative ones for me, or at least just three that immediately come to mind.
Three good ones.
Yep.
What are some of your favorite comedic television shows?
Whew, this one. I'm going to go with Cheers because I grew up with Cheers. I think I've seen every episode. I saw the Coach years. I saw the Woody years, the Diane years, the Rebecca years. Cheers was definitely awesome. Just fantastic. Seinfeld is in there. There is a little bit of Wonder Years, which I think was more of a dramedy. But I like the heart it always infused. And then, yeah, you know, I probably saw all the Friends episodes too, and it's probably a guilty pleasure, just liking all the Friends episodes. Although I always wondered with Friends, like, they were, like, everybody was kind of sleeping with everybody. I think that would put a lot of stress on a small group of friends.
Yeah.
Like, basically, Phoebe was the only one who wasn't sleeping with anybody at some point in the entirety of the show.
Hmm. Maybe they should have called the show Friends with
Benefits. Yeah, probably. I'm thinking that might have been a better way to go. But, yeah. So, definitely Cheers. Seinfeld splash in there. A little bit of Friends. And some Wonder Years for good measure.
Nice.
Gosh, they're all from, like, the 80s and 90s.
Yeah. Not any currently in production shows that you're a fan of?
Catastrophe on Amazon. Amazon
What's TV. That about?
Catastrophe is a, like, a couple comedy. It's about a now husband and wife, spoiler alert for season one. It's about a man and a woman who have a kid. Another spoiler alert. Jeez, I'm ruining this show for everybody. Go watch Catastrophe. It's fantastic. It's out of Britain, but it's distributed locally, or at least in the States, through Amazon.
Do they have cats?
I don't remember a cat. I remember a dog. I don't remember any cats. Sharon Horgan.
The title kind of implies that there's...
Ah, yes, a catastrophe. No, this is a catastrophe because these two individuals in the first episode, he is in London on business, and he meets this woman, and through comedic means, they end up sleeping together several times during his week trip, and then he goes his merry way back to United States, and she goes about being a teacher in the London area. And then a couple weeks later, she finds out she's pregnant.
Mm.
and reaches out to him, and so he ends up moving back to London. So it's two people brought together through circumstance, not intentionally, and all the zany antics that ensue. So,
like the film Knocked Up.
Yeah. Actually, I hadn't thought about that. That's a nice vague parallel there. Except, in Catastrophe, both people are incredibly good-looking and reasonably successful.
You're not a fan of Katherine Heigl or
well,
Seth
I mean,
Rogen as sexual beings?
Love you, Seth. You've got a man bod plus. I'm not going to get into talking about Katherine Heigl. I feel like that's a minefield. but yeah, Seth is defined. I mean, go watch.
It's like what, a bear.
Was it Neighbors or Bad Neighbors or whatever it's called?
Mm-hmm.
Where he takes a yeah, he's a large, rotund bear.
Hmm.
Maybe like Tom Hunt with a hairier chest.
I haven't seen Tom Hunt's chest. Is it not very?
I haven't seen it either. I'm only imagining that he looks like Seth Rogen but with less hair.
Oh, I imagine that he's like Seth Rogen but with more hair.
Oh, you think Tom Hunt has a hairier chest than Seth Rogen?
I kind of hope so, but I don't know.
I mean, Tom Gauntlet Throne, how's your chest hair doing? So yeah, Catastrophe, great show.
No cats.
No cats that I can recall. Hmm. I have watched all of Love on Netflix.
Oh, I watched all that. The end of the first season, I was kind of upset, like the way that it ended, but. Like, the actors are great, and Judd Apatow is great. So it's like, fine, second season, I'll watch it. Same thing happened. Like,
yep.
I enjoyed the story arc, and then the way it concluded was just, like, it made me so angry, I removed it from my watch list, because I don't want to watch any more of that.
I pretty much agree. By the end of the first season, I was like, huh? Like, kind of shrugging. Like, these characters aren't making decisions that normal people in these situations would make.
Yeah.
I feel like in season two, they explored that. About halfway through, two-thirds of the way through season two, they were getting down to brass tacks regarding those decisions. And then they kind of threw them all out the window and just repeated what happened at the end of season one. So they teased me in season two that they had fixed it, and then they kind of didn't. But I watched it all, and like you said, like the actors, great actors. It's a Judd Apatow project, a lot of pluses. But
a lot of laughs.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I think season two had less laughs than season one.
It's a little more drama.
Yeah, it was more grounded than season one was. Maybe they should get back to a little less grounded.
Hmm.
I mean, the whole magic castle thing.
That was fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of the best episodes, and they got into some serious stuff, but they had enough, what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of a wry effervescence to it.
Levity?
Yeah, there was enough levity in it. There was enough kind of like, this is goofy and fun, where they weren't spending time pointing out why they shouldn't be together.
Hmm.
So, yeah, those are more recent shows. I'm sure there's others. I do watch a lot of John Oliver.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's
Last
hilarious.
Week tonight.
Yep.
So good.
So, trying to get through my HBO stuff. It's hard.
Did you watch Crashing?
I watched all of Crashing.
That was really good.
I thought it was pretty good. It was very light. I think it's... Mm-hmm. My impression is it's exactly what Pete Holmes wanted to do. He was intending for it to be light.
Yep. And Judd Apatow again.
Again, Judd Apatow. Yep. So.
What's it like being really tall?
You get used to hitting your head on things, which... I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but yeah, when you slam your head on things and people are like, oh my gosh, and they like freak out, you're like, no, it's all good. I do this. It just happens. So I don't know if I have a callus on my head now from hitting it so often. I'd say it's awesome though. Being really tall is a great trait to have. I've never been anything but really tall, so I can't speak to the flip side, but I have embraced it, and it's ironic, actually, that you bring this up. I've thought about it more in the past year with the current political environment.
Hmm.
Not to get too deep or too dark or too heavy, but just with a lot of questions about privilege that go on in the past year or so. and thinking about the my own umbrellas of privilege that I live under, and being tall is one of those. I experience the world with that advantage that others don't have.
What are the advantages, I guess?
I would say if we're just speaking like kind of esoterically, or if we're speaking very generally, like a taller person is generally a larger person than other people. They have the advantage of speaking down to other people, so I think there's a conversational advantage. It's harder to approach a person who looms larger than you. So when I walk down the street, and this advantage exists because of a variety of reasons, but I just realized that when I walk down the street, I don't have much to fear on a typical day.
Yeah.
Whereas anybody who's shorter, less pale, less masculine, for, I don't know, you could probably point out a bunch of reasons, have more things to be concerned about when they walk down a street. Like, I don't mind walking to the fuse box late at night. I might be more cautious the later it gets, but I'm okay walking to and from the fuse box, which, by the way, the fuse box is a great place, great venue, and all those things. Just there's certain streets around near the fuse box that are less, that I have to travel through to get there,
yeah,
that are not as comfortable as other streets.
So you feel like when you're having a conversation with people, like, are they more respectful, or like, do you think your opinion carries more weight just because of the height differential?
I mean, I can't say that. This is honestly the most I've thought about the advantages of my height, maybe ever. I would say in an initial conversation with somebody I've never met, physical presence and such give me a leg up in the conversation, which quickly diminishes based on a whole variety of other pseudo things going on that have nothing to do with how tall somebody is. So in the first 2 seconds of a conversation, I might have a slight advantage because of my physical place of talking, which is 2 to 3 inches above everybody else.
Given the importance of first impressions, that seems valuable.
Yeah, I think actually what would run counter to that, though, is tall people tend to slouch a lot because they give up that advantage, that physical confidence. There's enough us in here to let you know that I'm getting into the weeds here. This is definitely opinion-based. I haven't researched all of this, but yeah, I personally try not to slouch as often as I used to, but I think a lot of tall people feel like they feel too big.
They're trying to normalize.
So they try to normalize themselves and bring themselves to an equal environment with the person that they're going to talk to.
Huh.
So they kind of slink down a little bit. It's amazing. If you think I'm tall now, wait till you see me with good posture. Oh. Some persistent people nearby. Chris, we should probably turn the lights back on now that we're not talking about With the Dark anymore.
I'd gotten kind of comfortable how we were, but well, if you want the lights on, I mean,
if you're comfortable, I am. I've gotten used to blue, Chris. I can keep going with it.
We'll turn it back on at the break. let's talk about your professional improv training in Chicago.
Sure. Yeah. I have taken, I train currently at the IO School in Chicago in Kingsbury. I would highly recommend it, iotheater.com/Chicago. I think that's the correct address. If not, use Google. Yes, I started about a year ago, went down with a couple people from RDI at the time who also were interested in doing that. And just wanted to get better at improv. Once I'd done the first 2 levels through Civic, which were fantastic, then got in the troupe, which was also fantastic, just reached a point where I wanted to keep honing my craft, keep developing my skills. And unfortunately, locally, there's not much else behind doing the classes at Civic or occasional workshops or just practicing a lot. And then you feel like you're kind of stuck in a vacuum. or maybe what is it, an echo chamber, so to speak. There's not a whole lot of new ideas coming in, so wanted to explore that more. So started up at the IO Theater. They have, what is it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 plus one levels. I believe it's 6+1 levels of training. And
7?
Well, I think the last level is a specific performance level, so you don't necessarily have to do it, but I could be off on this. So anybody who's truly interested in the IO School, go do your research. Actually, just go sign up and do a class. Do level one, but also do your research if you're planning on doing it longer than a couple of levels. So, yeah, it's been fantastic. It is a great place for performance. They have great shows. They have very skilled teachers. It's made me a better improviser, a better comedian, a better listener. Just all the things.
Have you done anything with Second City?
I have done only one thing. I was part of a small performance opening for another group on one of their not main stages. So any people out there who've performed at Second City in the main stage, I'm not saying that I performed at Second City. That's kind of a big deal, I guess, to say that. It's a big deal to get on the main stage in Second City, is my understanding.
Oh.
So if you say you performed at Second City,
that implies the main stage.
Yeah, which I did not do. I opened for a group on an off stage. But that's the extent of the Second City experience that I've had. I haven't actually seen any shows there either. So, yeah, there you go.
What is a herald?
I laugh because I still don't have a great definition of what a herald is. Excuse me, just having a little sippy poo of water there. A herald is a type of performance kind of put together over time and after seeing hundreds, if not thousands, of shows by Del Close. Del Close kept watching improv, kept seeing people improvise, and this is back in the 70s. And such, and started noticing patterns, started noticing in good improv. He started noticing patterns and different ways that people did things repeatedly that often worked every single time. And he formed these all together. My understanding is he put these all together eventually over time and labeled it the Herald. And it's just a structured way to do a longer performance in the improvisation format. And there's components to it. It's got beats, as they call them, in it. It's got openings. It's got ways to close. But it's a structured way to do a longer show with continuity and humor and heart and tell a story. That's which I think great improvisation does, is it tells a story in a way that elevates it. It elevates the room. Done at its peak, it blows the roof off. You just feel so fulfilled afterward, after you see a great herald. And it spun off so many varieties of long form from it. Like
The Dream? Was that part of it?
The Dream is I am not by any means an improv nerd as far as vocabulary or definitions are concerned. That was the first time I'd ever done The Dream. You're referring to
the Ambrosia Theater show?
Yeah, a couple weekends ago for myself.
With Little Tooties.
Yes. Tootsies. Little Tooties. We did The Dream there. It's the first time I'd ever done it. And that's a long form, but it's basically a freeze tag kind of thing where you just keep stepping in and doing different bits. I've seen people do it better than we did. But that's another piece. I think the Herald just combines different components and just tries to get a rhythm going in certain ways. So,
is improv therapeutic?
I heard Josh Heller say this the other day, and I don't know where he got it, but he said improv is therapeutic but is not good therapy. And I would have to agree with that. When I started improvising officially a couple of years ago, Like I said, I was transitioning out of a relationship at the time, and it was a big deal for myself, that the personal stuff that was going on. And then soon after, I lost a parent had passed away. And so there was a lot of stuff happening in my life, and improv was extremely therapeutic as far as a healthful way to pour energy into something that was fulfilling and happy and uplifting. But it is not good therapy. It is not a great place to, for me, I'm speaking from my experience, it is not a great place to work out a ton of things that need to be worked out, because you don't get deep enough. And you don't get deep enough consistently enough to explore the things that need to be explored from a therapy standpoint. Hmm. So it was great for me in being able to bring things up that were going on within my head and within my heart at the time. Yeah, I'd recommend it for people to watch and to do. But for a lot of the same reasons that you tell people, hey, you should challenge yourself. You should do things like that.
Thank you. What does it mean to find the emotion of an improv scene?
Each person, and if we're speaking to specifically like kind of two-person scenes, the most common types of improv scenes, each person in that scene is coming from a place. They have a want. And that want drives them in the choices that they make. So when you are driven to, when you are driven to want something, you will typically be happy about it or sad about it, depending on if you're getting your want or if you're not getting your want. So if whatever you want happens at the top of a scene, you should be extremely happy. But I think even at a more base level, emotions make a scene more human. And so the wants, yeah, I'm kind of going off into the weeds, but once you figure out what your character wants, you start to touch the humanity of the character. You can start to drive the character using emotions. Those are kind of fuel. Those kind of make things move forward. And then the comedy can start to come out of the situations that that character can get in. So I feel like I'm rambling a little bit. Does that make some sense?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
How do you see the Grand Rapids improv comedy scene changing?
There has been a push in the last year to, for lack of a better phrase, take it to the next level. I only know the improv scene, not exclusively. I know a little bit of the sketch scene, but mostly the improv scene. And even then, I've only been involved with the community in any capacity for 2 years. So I'm really a newbie to a lot of things. But I see a need, not a need, but a want for a more focused venue for people to perform at.
Which hopefully will be the Comedy Project.
Very much hope. Very supportive of that project and the people behind it. And I really think it's going to do some great things as it continues to develop. That I see stepping into that space, knock on wood. Sorry, Josh. We'll take that out in post. I see a space out there. We've got gifted comedians in this community. We have gifted improvisers. And I think the critical mass of an audience is out there too, with a little effort. It was this past, or 2 weeks ago, Josh mostly produced the show that we were all part of with Beer City in the Chicago group. And it was a huge success. And it was kind of a reminder that if you put enough energy behind it, and within reason, because I don't think Josh killed himself on it, but I know he put a lot of energy into it, it was a smashing success. I think there is a niche there that can be filled by having a more dedicated venue for people to kind of go to. And I know that Dog Story Theater, I love the place. I love Calm. I love all the pieces of the community that are in place. But I also think it'd be nice to have something that's a little more specific to what we're trying to do.
What are some of your favorite cocktails? Josh mentioned that you enjoy
cocktails. I do like a good cocktail. I would say my three favorite cocktails right now, in no particular order, are a Manhattan, a Negroni, and a good old gin and tonic.
What was the middle one?
Negroni.
What's that?
A Negroni is, I can't get into the etymology of a Negroni, but its essential components are gin, sweet vermouth, and Campari.
What's a Campari?
Campari is like an herbal liqueur, an herbal liquor. I think it is from distilled oranges, but it's very bitter, and it adds this kind of bitter herbal note to the drink, along with, like, way in the back end, a kind of punchy orange, just slight orange to it. And it's really good. Really, really good. Negronis are very tasty, done well. So are Manhattans and so are gin and tonics.
What's in a Manhattan?
Manhattan is typically rye whiskey, although you can use bourbon or non-rye whiskey. I wouldn't use scotches or Tennessee whiskeys, but you want a whiskey that's got more, like bourbons. Bourbon or a rye, or a Canadian rye. It also has sweet vermouth, which seems to be a common theme, and then bitters is the other component. So a couple splashes of bitters in that. And then I like to add some cherries, but I like mine a little sweeter. Some people would argue, don't put a cherry near my drink.
I didn't know until recently that bitters was like a liquid. I thought it was like an actual, like a plant that was added.
Yeah, there's all kinds. I mean, the bitters market is huge. I only have two or three different kinds. A friend of mine got me a whole, like, which I think they got, a couple different, two or three different kinds of bitters. And it's awesome. It's a nice little, cool, sophisticated component to a cocktail. So, yeah, I do love a Manhattan, and I pride myself on making a good one. So,
the final question of the interview portion of the show. If last but not least, if you could tell your 16-year-old self one thing, what would it be?
Chill the fuck out, dude. It's all good. Just be passionate about something and go for it. Like my 16-year-old self, even somewhat today, is just worried about all the details. And it's like, don't sweat the details. I sweated the small stuff a lot when I was younger. I still sweat the small stuff occasionally today, but I have more life under my belt to tell myself to chill out. But yeah, 16-year-old self, it's all going to work out. It's all going to be fine. You got this. Just be passionate about what you want to do and go for it. And it'll happen. Trust me, it'll happen.
Thank you.
It has been my pleasure.
And I still haven't had time to set up a transition into the break. So if you wouldn't mind doing some sort of musical or some sort of performance to take us into the break and then ring the bell when you're done, so I know to stop it, please. Do